Greetings, travelers!
Greetings, travelers, in the most mythical March ever!
Oh my gosh, yes, Mythical March with Mark and Erica.
Yeah.
And man, this is crazy. Eerie Travels is exploding. We've been traveling so much. We've been doing all these conventions. We've been doing all these appearances. We've got Bigfoot, Georgia Bigfoot Conference coming in just a couple weeks.
Yes, yes. So, I think when this episode airs, it's approximately 1 week away. So
yeah,
if you want to see us, grab your tickets. Both of us will be there. Unlike Frogland, where Mark didn't tell me about it, so I didn't get to go.
Oh, I told you about it. You just had other plans. You had other plans.
I did. We were visiting.
You got to remember, gang, we just started this a little over a year ago. And so we were still had events lined up all the way this far out for both of us and things. And now we're starting to do a lot more as Eerie Travels itself. And we're getting invited to all these conventions and appearances. We got to talk to the wonderful folks that are organizing Squonkapalooza. We got to talk to the people from the Hodag Festival. They are all super excited to have us out. And Mothman just opened the grand opening last weekend of the Mothman mini golf next door to the Mothman Museum. So,
oh my gosh, I'm excited. We're going to have to go hit that up before the Mothman Festival because
we're going to be doing a Mothman trip long before, because we want to hit the stuff before it gets too crazy crowded for tourist stuff.
Yes, no, I agree. I'm so excited for that. But this is going to be a really cool episode for a couple of reasons. But I think, don't you have some breaking news?
Breaking news? Yes, yes, breaking news today. This was the coolest thing I've seen in a while. It pops up on my newsfeed. I follow NASA pretty solidly just because you never know what you're going to see there, you know, what images are going to pop up. And I keep hoping to see, you know, some fun stuff pop up. I had meant to go to the Air Force Museum and look at some of the NASA exhibits and look at the Project Blue Book exhibit before it's being closed at the Air Force Museum. But because of traveling issues, we had to put new tires on the Erie Mobile. So we couldn't quite do that. But when I came back, I was pulling up my NASA feed to see what happened to the Blue Book thing, but this came out, which is calling all adventurers. It is time to gather your party and your favorite tabletop role-playing game system. And that is because NASA has decided to release a D&D adventure or type adventure. You can use it for just about any tabletop system. So it'll work for GURPS or any of those other ones that you like, Pathfinder, you name it. But
nobody
the story
likes GURPS. It takes forever to do any sort of combat. Anyway,
continue on. But anyway, a dark mystery is setting over the city of Aldastron on the rogue planet of Exolaris. Researchers dedicated to study the cosmos have discovered that the Hubble telescope has vanished from Earth's timeline. Only an ambitious crew of adventurers can uncover what was lost. So it's designed for a party of 4 to 7, level 7 to 10 characters, and easily adaptable to your preferred tabletop setting. So NASA actually released this, and it takes on a pretty cool villain, and you overcome challenges and do the usual questing thing. And they actually have a new hashtag, NASA TTRPG, on their social media. So definitely.
Wow. Well, we're going to share a link to this. I think
it's
maybe
free too.
Maybe Mark, you should get it. And then next time Bo and all of us are together, you run us on this, right? Because it would be almost the equivalent of Bureau 13.
Oh, well, no, this is more classic fantasy, but we could arrange maybe a Bureau 13 adventure as well while we do it.
I tried.
All I know is I can bring out
you. You just let it hang there. Whatever.
That's not Bureau 13. I'm sorry. You don't understand Bureau 13. We'll get there.
No, I don't. And I don't care to. But we are going to be talking about one of my favorite controversial topics today.
What?
Because I create, this is still brewing with our listeners. It was one of our very first episodes. But yes. We are very fortunate because our producer has done a bunch of the lore research on this, but we're going to talk about vampires today.
Yeah. So let's bring on from behind the scenes and get her off the clackety clacks. Let's bring out Bo Lake.
Woo! Yay.
Hey.
There was no snacks in the green room for me because I didn't put them out. So well,
put the word I'm to the starving producer. Now. Tell the producer that they're supposed to put snacks in the green room.
Yeah.
Where are my snacks? Did they
leave the window down so that the air could get in there? Because
No.
We lost two guests that haven't come back yet because we forgot to leave the windows down.
We're not going to say who they are. Okay, so, Bo, what vampire are we talking about for your portion of this amazing episode?
So we are going to talk about the Richmond vampire, who is, he's kind of local to me. He's a couple hours away in the cemetery called the Hollywood Cemetery in Richmond, Virginia.
Wait a minute. So this vampire is not like from Romania or something? Like we're not going in that way back machine? He's from Richmond, Virginia?
And not the Hollywood Cemetery in Hollywood, California.
No, not the fun one. This one is just called that.
Hey, this one's I couldn't pretty find fun any... too. I've been there. This one's pretty fun too.
I looked at pictures and it is very beautiful. It's very hilly. There's lots of trees. If I was dead, I could see it being a great place to rest.
By rest, you mean walk all the time? Because that's what it sounds like you'd be doing.
Yeah, having a picnic, okay. You know.
So Richmond, Virginia, take us on the journey.
All right, so this cemetery is fairly near Virginia Commonwealth University, which we call VCU. Two U.S. presidents are buried there. James Monroe and John Tyler. And there's another mausoleum there that is drawing a lot of attention. And this is for a man named William Wortham Poole. Most people call him just W.W. Poole. Okay. Because that's what's on his big mausoleum. Like it's a multi, I don't want to say like a multi-family, but like a multi-person tomb. So it's like him, his wife, and I guess some of their kids.
Okay.
So William Wortham Poole, he seems like a totally normal guy. He was born in Mississippi. He worked as like a bookkeeper and a clerk. He got married and had four children. And he lived a fairly long time. He was born sometime in the 1800s. I didn't write down when he was born, but he lived to be 80 and he died in 1922.
Wow.
Yeah. So he lived a good long time. He died of pneumonia, as often happens when you're older. His family tomb doesn't have his death date on it. It has his wife's death date of 1913, which I found kind of romantic. Like it implies that he died with her in 1913 and his body just lived on till 1922. Which, you know, sounds sweet.
Yeah.
Well, he seems like he's totally normal. There is more to the story. Legend-wise, he was ousted from England in the 1800s for being a vampire.
What?
Yes.
I love that.
Why? Why they were just like, you're evicted from England because you're a vampire.
I just
want
to
get
clarify.
Out of here.
He was born in Mississippi, somehow made it to England, and England went... You're a vampire, get out.
Yeah.
I think I had the same problem in England when I was there.
They were like, that garlic thing, Mark. We don't trust you. You get out of here.
Wow.
So
wow.
It seems like this was a story that came out in like 1976 in like the VCU campus newspaper. Like they were like, holy shit, this guy was in England. And they found out he was a vampire and they were like, you go back to Virginia, get out of here. So that came out around the 70s. And partially it's because his tomb is decorated in a certain way that is apparently suspicious. There's Masonic symbols on it. There's Egyptian like iconography, but most of the research I found says it's vaguely Egyptian. So is it Egyptian at all? I don't know.
It's Mason. It's Mason. So yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of like Masonic stuff. And for people who don't know, like the Masons are like, it's kind of a fraternity. It seems more magical than it is. It's just a bunch of businessmen hanging out.
We'll go into the Masons at some point, I'm sure. My father was a Mason, and a lot of family traditions come from that. So I know a little bit about them. I never joined. My father told me it was a good thing to join, but then I never did. So I may
it
have
seems
missed
like
out
it
on
involves a lot of like meetings. You could have known the secrets, Mark.
This could have saved my life, and I could have known everything, and I wouldn't be doing what I do.
Yeah. And along with the Masonic symbols and the vaguely Egyptian iconography, there are a lot of double W's on the tomb. And what's funny about this is because his name is W.W. Poole, you know, of course that's what's on there, but people are like, it looks like vampire fangs.
Fangs, right. Yeah, though, so, when you carve W's, it does look like that.
Yeah, but apparently he does not have his full name on his tomb, because it costs more money to get that like chiseled onto the tomb. So he's like, you know what? We're going to save some money. It's just WW. That's fine. Two letters cost less than 13 letters.
Okay. So when did he die?
He died in 1922.
Yeah.
So almost 50 years later, somebody goes, you know what? He was kicked out of England. There's a WW on his tomb. Vampire. I just want to point out this is the 1970s.
Now there's more to this.
There's more to it. Okay. There's more to it.
There's a whole event coming up that I'm familiar with that I'm excited to hear about.
All right. So we have to go back in time a little bit. 1925.
October 2nd. I know the date.
October 2nd, 1925. See, Mark always has the dates ready to go.
Not always. This was on some of them.
So the Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad workers were tunneling under the Churchill to make it so that the train could go, you know, through the tunnel. But it collapsed. And when rescue teams went in to help people, they found a blood-covered creature with jagged teeth and skin hanging off of its body crouched over one of the workers. You know, that's really gruesome to see someone with their skin falling off. And so obviously they were like, that's a vampire. So they chased it all the way back to Hollywood Cemetery to W.W. Poole's tomb. This is why people think he's a vampire, because they chased some guy.
There's a lot to this story. I'm sure, Bo, are you going to go into this? Because I don't want to step on your toes here. So
I am going to go into the person they actually think it was.
Good.
Who was, you know, his skin was falling off.
Yeah, it's a pretty story, actually. So again, where we find out that the real history is so much worse than the
I had to like write it down and then step away for a minute because I was like, oh, that's so sad.
It's so sad.
All right. So the next part comes from two folklorists, Gregory Maitland and Walter S. Griggs Jr., who wrote a book called The Collapse of Richmond's Churchill Tunnel, put out by our friends at History Press.
Hey.
So they dispute that it was a vampire.
Right.
He said that the creature was actually the train fireman. Mark, do you know what the train fireman is?
That's the guy who actually is shoveling the coal into the boiler. And so he is usually the biggest, strongest dude on the train because he's got to shovel in 2 tons of coal by his lonesome. Usually there's sometimes two, but this was the train was, it was basically one, I think it was CNO Railroad, and it was one train pulling 10 cars, first time through the tunnel in a long while, because the tunnel had just recently reopened. And it was filled with construction workers who were going to load the train up with dirt. And that was what they were going to fill the flat cars with. And then they would just haul it away.
Because they were still digging. Yeah, they were still digging. And so they were going to use that train to help them get stuff out. So he's shoveling to keep the train moving.
The boiler going.
To keep the boiler going. So then the train will, you know, accelerate and do train things. And then the tunnel collapsed. And as the tunnel collapses, the boiler exploded.
Right. Because pressure on a steam engine is not a good thing. There's a reason why we didn't have too many steam-powered submarines. So,
That's kind of why steam is kind of, you know, we're like, let's not let's not do that anymore. It's a bad idea. So when the boiler exploded, as you can imagine, that's a lot of steam. That's a lot of water. That's a lot of stuff happening. His upper body was scalded and his teeth were broken. And in shock and, you know, being a very strong man, as Mark said, he pulled himself together and escaped the tunnel. He like stumbled out.
Yeah, and a lot of witnesses escaped from being under those flat cars. So that's how they were climbing out of the tunnel. And he was supposedly one of the last ones out.
Yeah, so there were a lot of witnesses watching this happen. As he's stumbling out, his skin is like sloughing off because he's been hit with so much like
scalding
burning
water. Yeah, from the boiler.
Like, I can't imagine, you know, having this happen to you in a dark tunnel and then climbing off of a train, climbing out of this tunnel, looking for help. Luckily, unlike the legend, he does get help. He's taken to the hospital, but unfortunately he passes away. Records from that time, you know, were not very detailed. They just mentioned that he was scalding. Escaping.
The newspaper article is very scant on anything.
Yeah, it just said, he got scalded.
Yeah, definitely a slow news day, except for that, you know.
So they didn't say a lot about it, just that some guy was scalded and he got taken to the hospital. Nothing really else. But there's also another part to this story in that he's not what was mistaken as a vampire. The vampire was actually awakened by the collapse, escaped his tomb.
Blood. Yeah.
Yeah, went into a frenzy. But he's not either that fireman or WW Pool. He just happened to be in the general area and escaped into the tomb.
Wow. And his name was Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's railroad spikes. But I've heard that story. Now, what's cool is I've been to that tunnel. Ooh. And it was closed after that because there were so many cave-ins after that. And they were just like, Virginia said, nope, you do not get to do this no more. This train, this tunnel is done. But at least two tunnel workers were never recovered from that tunnel. And we don't know who they were. And, you know, at that point, employment records were kind of iffy at best, so we don't even know. Most likely they were either just beyond slave labor or immigrants, you know, something like that. So
someone paid under the table. If paid
exactly. And that's why I think the whole, well, he was just scalded and there's not much details because he was obviously an African-American man. And so the newspapers just didn't care, which is the sad truth. Now, 2006, they tried to uncover the train and see if they could find the men who were buried there, maybe, you know, bring it into this. So the Historical Society, and I even think the History Channel was involved with that. And they found, when they opened the tunnel, they started drilling and they found this like silt and water that basically was like quicksand. And they're like, nope, it's not safe. Can't go in. So it ended before it even began.
Yeah.
The eastern end of the tunnel is still accessible. That's where I was at.
So there's like ghost tours and stuff, obviously, that go through that cemetery. And a lot of the ghost tour people just look at the vampire story as like one of those games of telephone that just goes through history. You know, we hear this story. Oh, that kind of sounds like a vampire. We're going to like add to it and say it's the vampire.
Raggly
and if
teeth,
it's WW,
blood. Yeah.
Yeah. And if it's WW Pool, we got to put him somewhere vampire-y, and Mississippi is not very vampire-y. Let's say he went to England. Another part of the story is that the tomb itself often gets vandalized.
That sadly is true.
Yeah, because people are curious in one aspect. And I know grave robbers in the early like 1900s also tried to get in there. I don't know if they were successful. I couldn't find anything about that, getting into Poole's tomb. I know that even today, a lot of like teenagers and like college students go over there and leave stuff. And the one spooky thing that I'll end this on, of the information I have, is that there's a lunette window in the tomb, which has been broken, but it's been broken from the inside.
Spooky. What?
Yeah. So,
well, I don't love that at all.
And it's was it Virginia Commonwealth University right there? So that's why,
yeah,
you know, the college tends to, colleges and high schools tend to enhance urban legends quite a bit over the decades. And especially,
yeah, that's what I was finding a lot. It was them like pushing the story further and like adding details to it, whether from history or just like, you know, because people like tell a story and then they add little details, and then other people tell a story and add little details. But it seems like the train collapse, which was itself, you know, macabre and depressing, is the origin of this story. But that window, though, vampire lives.
I'm down for a vampire. I just want to know if he's turning into bat and flying out the window. See how I did that? Flipped another one in.
Well, yes. it really, this story really blew up, I want to say, in the mid 80s during the whole vampire craze, the post Anne Rice craze. And we'll get back to that in a little bit. But
yeah, it seemed like the original story was in like 1957. And I was going to ask you, Mark, in the 50s, I know there was like a couple Dracula movies that came out.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what kind of
that would have been
in like the collective
first,
unconscious?
Yeah, early, that would have been one of the first early kind of satanic panic eras, because Dracula, the movies had been out for a while, and we had already gone through back down to the, you know, the Abbott and Costello rabbit hole in the 40s when the monsters were not just scary anymore. But then they were starting to come back up in the late 50s, early 60s, and that's, you know, Dark Shadows kind of brought them back in the mid 60s. But that, it takes a while. So yeah, the mid 50s was kind of just one of those, we don't talk about black magic, we don't talk about witchcraft, you know, but it's the communist menace. And, you know, and that's what vampires were.
Yeah, because I looked it up and there was like the Horror of Dracula,
this was
Blood of the Vampire, those kind of movies around the same time.
Pre-Hammer horror, but close. Yeah. But I think that's Richmond vampire.
I just want to make sure he never went to London. He was never in England. They just said
no
he
proof
was
of
in
that.
England. No. No proof. I couldn't find any reference to him traveling abroad.
This is the most boring vampire story ever. Terribly horrific part about these things that happened to these people with this train thing, and that's terrible. And calling him a ghoul, his skin was sloughed off. I don't love that at all.
And people were apparently yelling vampire, vampire, and chased him over to the tomb. But I think that was added afterward. They just took him to the hospital.
Yeah, the poor guy Mosby there. And his obituary was very basic, just a badly scalded. You know, or something, fatally scalded, I believe.
It was like a footnote on like the article or something.
He wasn't even described hardly at all. But he's buried there in that same cemetery. He's buried in Hollywood Cemetery. So.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe he broke the window from the inside. Like, you guys want to do this? I'll create a mystery. I'll make it happen.
He's like, I'll be the vampire.
They already said I had funky teeth. Let's do this.
Yeah, no, that's totally okay. That's bizarre. But, not quite the vampire I was anticipating.
Well, I've got a vampire story after we get back from the break that I think will give you a little, you know, how about a vampire that was involved with one of the U.S. presidents? And I'm not talking about Abraham Lincoln, although kinda, but we'll do that after we get back from the break. Eerie Appalachia. Gear up for a frightful jaunt into the darkest reaches of the ancient Appalachians. Folks deep within the Appalachian hollers lean close to the campfire to share stories of the inexplicable with hushed awe. Monsters rumbling in the hills, strange lights darting through the pitch black night sky, horrible occurrences almost ineffable in their bizarre tragedy. Tall tales, you might say. Tell that to the Flatwoods monster in Braxton County, West Virginia, or the Goat Man of Louisville. Look into his humanoid eyes and let him know you don't believe. And what of those apparitions in Mammoth Cave's Corpse Rock, or the Satan spawn known as the Jersey Devil? How do you respond when confronted by these mysteries? From the metaphysical energy that swirls near Serpent Mound in Ohio to Point Pleasant's Mothman legacy, Mark Muncy and Carrie Schultz explore the dark history lurking in the shadows of Appalachia. Read by Mark Muncy, author and experts on strange folklore with appearances on shows such as Ancient Aliens, The Curse of Robert the Doll, and many, many more.
Destiny Beard, the lyrical soprano who will haunt your dreams. With her alluring melodies and intricate harmonies, this dark siren of wistful song shall capture your soul and lead you into the night. Check out Destiny's new single, The Haunting Is Over, with international musicians Sam Haynes and Gary Bennett, as well as her other musical works at destinybeard.com.
We're back. I'm going to bring up a historical vampire from early America. Do you remember? We're going to go back in the Wayback Machine just to 2012.
I really wish somebody had brought snacks for all this Wayback Machine action.
So 2012, do you remember the movie that came out based on a novel called Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter?
Of course I do.
You remember that movie?
Of course I do.
Yeah. Well, that kind of brought about this resurgence in research of historical vampires. And there was a story that was around a long time before that that wasn't about Abraham Lincoln and a vampire, but was actually about his successor and a vampire.
Oh.
So we're going to do a little bit of history here, and then we're going to talk vampire. All right?
Okay.
So the man himself, President Andrew Johnson, who was considered by many to be one of the worst presidents of all time. We don't get into politics much here, but I will say he's got a lot of history. But the story about this guy that we're going to talk about gets really complicated very quickly. So try to keep up. Erica, you're going to keep me in check on this, all right?
Okay.
So if
okay.
you start falling behind, let me know.
I will.
So Lincoln seeking re-election, 1864, right?
Okay.
He dumps his vice presidential candidate, Hannibal Hamlin, and he picks this other guy, Andrew Johnson. And the reason he does is because Johnson's got some Southern connections. Remember, he's trying to mend the post-Civil War and all this. But Johnson also has a very anti-slavery stance, so he still fits what Lincoln needs. But Johnson, this guy, I don't think he's the worst president. I think he's one of the funnest presidents. But I also think Warren G. Harding was an excellent president, too. Because this guy, Johnson, shows up intoxicated for his own inauguration. I mean, that takes some courage there, right? You know?
I'm impressed. That's what I'm going to say. I'm impressed. Yeah.
And right after that is when, you know, he's already made this great first impression, right? And then right after that is Lincoln gets assassinated and suddenly he's the president.
I don't love any of that. You know what's interesting is I kind of wonder if lessons are learned because Abraham thinks that's fine. I can keep this guy in check. He's got this thing. It'll all be okay.
Yeah.
And then it's and not then as okay.
John Wilkes Booth decides to change history. So yeah.
Yes.
Now he survives an impeachment vote, but by leaving his own party while he's serving as the president. And he's constantly making just crazy decisions and he's not following any path or procedure. And that's why historians like, we can't really define this guy. He's an odd duck. Now, we just had Fortean in February, right?
Yes. Yes, we did.
And Andrew Johnson just kind of disappears into the history books as just this man who, you know, didn't care and did his own thing. So did not get reelected. And of course, you know, that's history. But our wonderful guy, Charles Fort, who Fortean in February is named after, wrote a book in 1933 called Wild Talents.
Okay.
And that was where he was talking about just weird things in history and weird things. He was talking about ESP. He was talking about ghosts. He was talking about all the fun things we love to talk about. And that's why we did 40 in February for him. But he lists President Johnson pardoned a man in 1867 who was convicted of killing two sailors and was convicted of vampirism by drinking their blood.
Pump the brakes. What just happened?
So this is from Charles Fort's book, right?
Okay.
Fort, you know, pioneer of paranormal research. And the footnote of this story is from November 4th, 1892, in the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. Okay. So I was able to pull up that newspaper article because I wanted to know what the hell is this story. Because Charles Fort just says this man, you know, President Johnson pardoned a vampire who drained the blood of two sailors. So reading that article, which is available online, thankfully, the Brooklyn Public Library has all the Eagles articles online. And the report says that a convicted murderer, who was a Portuguese sailor named James Brown, now not James Brown.
Are you making up these names?
No, this is, and he was sent to the National Asylum in Washington from a federal prison in Ohio. And it was because 25 years prior, he was charged with being a vampire and living on human blood. So this is the article in 1892.
Wow.
Wow. He was seen drinking blood from two men killed on a whaling vessel. He was sentenced to death, but President Johnson commuted his sentence to life in prison.
Okay. So there were two people that were killed on a whaling vessel.
Yeah.
And he drank their blood. So he was convicted of being a vampire, and somehow the president decided to get involved and pardon the vampire.
Yes. Didn't pardon him, free him, like some of the stories suggested, but commuted him to a life sentence from death. Because obviously...
I have questions. Yeah. I have so many questions, starting with, how did the president even get involved in this?
Because somebody petitioned him
about it. What happened to cannibalism? You're like, we wouldn't convict somebody of vampirism now. They'd be convicted of cannibalism.
Cannibalism or desecration of a corpse, or you know, improper use of a corpse and stuff like that. So that's how we redefined it.
Way better crimes now. Okay.
Yes.
So he's in an insane asylum because he ate people. Cool. Next.
He drank people. He drank people. So there's a difference. As Bo will tell you from playing Baldur's Gate, Asterion has very strong things about cannibalism versus drinking. So, but anyway, now what happens is you start looking into this, right? You start researching this, and James Brown, who was an African-American cook on a ship, and the actual case was he got into an argument with another sailor after he was insulted, and Brown stabs the man and was convicted of murder, but his death sentence was commuted by President Johnson. Now, the report does not mention anywhere multiple murders, does not mention anywhere of drinking blood, does not mention anywhere of this man living on blood for months at a time or anything like that. And I think the Brooklyn Daily Eagle just had a slow news day and decided to make the story a little more exciting about this guy being transferred into an insane asylum from a prison system.
But it really, what it was he... killed people.
He killed a guy who insulted him. So that's the police report.
There are many things one can do. That is not how one handles that situation.
Now, we're talking telephone here, right? We're talking how, you know, stories change and stuff. Now, the reason I think, and a few other historical researchers have also come across this, is there was another case in 1892 where there was a vampire case. And it involved a family named Brown. And this family was actually digging up deceased family members. And they were actually feasting on their deceased loved ones.
Having them buried?
Oh, they decided to do it later, right? They suddenly came up with if we feast on our dead loved ones, we can gain their knowledge and powers and stuff like that. So that's where they came up with this. So I think the two stories got combined, and that's where the brown vampire story comes from. But this is more ghoul than vampire, right?
It's totally ghoul zombie-esque. Yeah. And I just want to throw this out there. If people want to do stupid shit like that, cleansing of the gene pool will come into play and they'll be taken out by eating rotting flesh. So let them have at it. Like, if that's your hashtag goal in life, you knock yourself out.
So maybe that's, you know, where the two stories combine and the reporter at the Brooklyn Eagle decides to, you know, combine the stories. Or maybe he was just confused and thought that these were the same stories. Now, there's some other fun twists in this, right? To go back to Johnson. Like, Johnson pardoned 600 some odd people while he was president.
And wow.
One of the people he pardoned was Dr. Samuel Mudd, who was the physician who treated John Wilkes Booth after he killed Lincoln, where he jumped from the stage and hurt himself. And you know, this guy treated him and said he was a hero. And so then Johnson pardons him later. Yeah. So there's some oddball stuff like that later. That doctor, after he's pardoned, goes back to work, and he supposedly gets involved in a grave robbing scam a few years later. So,
there was a lot of time spent in cemeteries back then. Like, seriously. Yeah. This is pre-TV, okay? I understand.
Yeah. And I did not expect any of this, right? When you're researching this stuff, you think it's crazy. But now, there was another author named Christopher Farnsworth who was researching this. Okay. And he came up with a fun fiction series called The President's Vampire. Johnson recruits James Brown as a secret agent, and he's sworn to protect every president of the United States from then on. And so he has a book series about this agent that works for the government that's the president's vampire. So so there's some good that came from this.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's just, now, it's James, just very weird.
Now, James Brown himself went on to become, you know, the King of Soul and released. No, that's a different James Brown. Most Notably Living in America. No. This James Brown went on, sadly. He did die in the insane asylum in Ohio.
Oh, he died? Because vampires don't die. He just died?
Yeah, exactly. But he died in the insane asylum. We have his records of his death, but he was buried in an unmarked grave at the asylum. So we don't know where his body is.
Oh, well, it's probably not there because he's a vampire.
Hey, you know, and it doesn't exactly say which of the asylums he's at. I'm thinking it was probably the Ridges, which is in Athens, was a Kirkbride. That seems to be where he went. But some people say he was sent to the National Asylum in Washington. But he was in the federal prison in Ohio, so I think that might have been way far to send him. But, you know, again, the records just say he passed away in asylum. And that's the criminal records. We can't find any asylum records for him. That's where where did he disappear? Did he get removed by the government?
That's what I have to say about all of that. Okay, so we have a presidential vampire, a Richmond vampire. What else do you got for me, Mark?
Well, what I got with all that is just saying, okay, we did an episode many, many aeons ago in the early days where we discussed strong fictional vampires, right?
Yep.
And you brought up that the Twilight vampires were the strongest of all the vampires because they couldn't be killed in any other way, shape, or form, right? Than being basically chopped to pieces and their skin is marble. So you have
I need to clarify because I have since that episode listened to 25 hours of Midnight Sun, which was the follow-up in Edward's side of the story. Mm. In this particular fictional marvel, I hope everyone can hear the sarcasm, it discusses the vampire's ability to be killed. They can't even kill themselves. So they can't be chopped up. They have to be ripped apart by either another vampire or one of the werewolves in the book. As long as there are several werewolves and they catch them by surprise, because if the vampires get their arms around the werewolf, they crush their bones into powder. So just to one up my previous statement regarding these vampires, they're even more destructible that they can't even commit suicide. Yes, that got brought up in the book, not something I said. Why are you bringing this up, Mark? To drop the fans being, again?
One of our listeners brought up a question. And okay. This was on one of the message boards. And I think it might have been the Discord. But they were talking about they had recently rewatched Interview with the Vampire, right? Okay, so now here's the question. All right, Mandela Effect, is it Interview with a Vampire or Interview with the Vampire?
Oh God, I thought it was the vampire. A vampire.
It is with a vampire, right? So not the vampire.
Well, that's very Mandela Effect. Talk about first episode. Which one is it? Wow. So,
but anyway, one of the things is, you know, the interviewer, played by Christian Slater in movies, is asking him all the usuals. Yeah, can you handle a cross? Oh yeah, I can look at crucifixes. I enjoy looking at crucifixes.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, what about coffins? Well, that we do have to do. You know, what about daylight? It's hit or miss with us and stuff like that. So it's one of those. Was that the question was that the first to really start changing the vampire tropes? Was that the first mass market one where they were like, because now it seems like every vampire movie, every vampire thing somewhere, there's always some vampire that goes, well, you know, does the push the glasses up the nose and goes, well, actually, we aren't allergic to garlic. It seems to be the thing now, right? That's in every vampire movie since that.
I think that one has to start with establishing what we think the first true vampire lore was. And I think if we're going to establish that and not go all the way in the Wayback Machine, because right now we've been in it a few times today, it's a little stinky, to when like the vampire in Romania and all, you know, Vlad the Impaler, that was a little bit different than Bram Stoker's Dracula, which I feel like was one of the first literary things to really start establishing the vampire guidelines, right? That they could turn into a bat or a wolf, I think, in the book. And I think, you know, slept in coffins and had to drink blood and had the mind things. Like, I think that's one of the first major ones to kind of talk about that, right? To sort of lay the groundwork with what are the vampire, quote unquote, rules, right?
Yeah. And it is Interview with the Vampire, just so we know.
Listen, Mandela Effect, I'm in a dissertation. I got us in the Wayback Machine. How come when you're in the Wayback Machine?
Got us going back, right?
I have to pay attention, but when I'm doing the Wayback Machine, you're like, whatever.
No.
Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, that probably set the modern rules, right? What we think of. And he actually made most of that up off the top of his head. You know, there is no predecessing any of that except for silver, and the other thing was crucifixes, but even that we're not positive that was anything before that. So the roses were definitely a thing, you know, putting roses on a vampire's grave to keep them from rising, that was a thing, but that was roses were put everywhere just to keep the plague away because it smelled so much better. So pocket full of posies.
We can go down the rabbit hole at some point about some of this and what the real meaning of the word vampire and the real meaning of what a werewolf was and things like that, because those were more things assigned to people's behavioral patterns in way back times. But what I was going to say is, I think that Bram Stoker tropes were kept in check until things like Interview with the Vampire changed it slightly, not horribly, because she kept a lot of the things. You know, the only thing that was not necessarily held was the church part. It seemed like she left that out, but they still had to sleep basically in coffins. They still couldn't go out in the light. They still had to feed on blood. They did have a degree of suggestion, aka mind control. You know, there were still these things. I think what happened in some of the more modern literature, such as Twilight, but you can even go back to Vampire Diaries, where they had, you know, rings that they could wear that allowed them to go out in the sunlight, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm dutifully watching Angel right now, so we can do our Angel versus Buffy. I'm in season 3. You warned me about it, but I'm there anyway. It's fine. I'm sure I'll get out.
Season four is the worst. Sorry.
I thought you said it was season three.
No, four is the one you got to watch for. Four is the one, I think there's like two episodes that are worth it, and then just skip the rest.
Okay, it doesn't matter. I'm in it to win it now. But as one does.
Season five redeems it all, though. Season five redeems it.
Okay, I hope so. But one of the things that I think is interesting is even like with some of those tropes and stuff, it was very typical. Like, you know, it's interesting because they took it to the extreme of becoming monstrous, right? Versus just the fangs coming out or being monstrous to begin with. So I think Interview with the Vampire started it, but I feel like it was a Diet Coke version of starting.
It was 1976, I think the book came out. It was definitely mid-70s. But I think I'm going to bring back up my personal thing that I think changed it all and changed all the rules. And that was Captain Kronos, Vampire Hunter from 1974. And it predates Interview with the Vampire. And that was the one where as they're hunting the vampire, they have all these different techniques and different things. And it was towards the end of the Hammer Horror was really trying different things by this point. They'd already done Dracula AD 71 and all this other stuff. They were pretty much done with the Christopher Lee.
Nobody saw that movie, Mark.
Hammer fans did. But anyway, because it's Hammer time. But Captain Kronos, he actually has a thing, but there are so many different types of species of vampires that there's as many of them as there are butterflies. And so they all have different things that they feed on, different effects. And the vampires in that movie could walk in the daylight and they fed on youth. They actually stole your youthful vigor from you and stuff like that. So it was very cool. So I like to put in back in the Captain Kronos vampires are badass and I want to bring them back in. And I'd like to see them fight the Twilight vampires, although they are killed by a long-haired guy with a mirrored sword. So maybe not ripped apart by a werewolf.
I've never seen these movies. I don't know that I ever will because VHS. And what I will say is I still win.
Oh, no, I agree. I still think because of the writing skills dedicated to the Twilight vampires to make them.
You are so lucky we're not sitting next to each other right now.
But to make them as powerful as they possibly can be. But I'm still up with my Vampire X from Bureau 13 novels that Nick Bellotta did, where he turns everyone into a vampire who's even remotely killed anywhere within a 2-mile radius of him, because he was a vampire at Nagasaki when the bomb hit. So he's an irradiated vampire and he can't be killed.
Well, with that and everything else, thank you for being able to bring up Bureau 13 somehow again, because I really think we should start keeping score, travelers. But here are some travel for this episode, even though you may not think we discussed it. So there's a couple places you can go see. One of them is the Hollywood Graveyard, not in Hollywood, California, but in Richmond, Virginia. Yep. If you go to these sites, travelers, we always please just ask that you do it during normal business hours and do not vandalize anything, even though it sounds neat. Take some pictures. That would be cool.
There is a ghost tour that is in that area, and they will take it, as Bo mentioned, they will take it to the graveyard and they will take it to several of the graves. They will also take it to the Chesapeake and Ohio's railroads, Churchill Tunnel, and you can go on the east side, but you don't go far in because that's when that crazy silt and water is there. So, but you can go up to the, you know, up to the area that's marked, and you can enjoy, you know, visiting this old tunnel and wondering how many are still down there.
Wow. Well, okay, Mark, take us away. And you know, traveler fans, don't forget, you can always spend a nice, lazy afternoon watching all the Twilight movies. So going to throw that out there as something that can happen.
Or have much better time watch Captain Kronos, Vampire Hunter.
You go. Take it away, Mark.
All right. Listeners, thank you again so much, as always, for joining us. Thank you so much for subscribing. Thank you for our Patreon members who are now growing and growing and joining us on Discord and having all the fun. We bumped into a few of you at Frogman Fest. We've bumped into a few of you at some of the other festivals, which is amazing and always fun to see. We like just listening to meeting other travelers too. And keep sending us your vampire stories and your listener tales and any legends you've heard. We love to hear them because it gives us places to travel in the future and more things for us to experience and more things to explore. But with that, listeners, it is time to turn out the lights, get ready for a nice quiet evening, where you will boil yourself some garlic hang up some leaves of Wolfsbane and protect yourselves from the vampires that may come. But actually, as they push the glasses up, they will tell you that none of that bothers them. And they're going to just walk right into your house. You don't even have to invite them anymore because vampires don't mean anything because they're creatures of the night and they could give a crap about you. And they will be in your house and they will come and drink your blood. And then we will see you on the other side.